desecrate our Constitution, or you look at the laws that have been passed into law and say, never mind, we'll just ignore that. Instead, we are going to be in your face, we are going to be on your asses, and we are going to make sure, we're going to make sure you understand what democracy looks like.
There you go. There you go, Congressman Jasmine Crockett. We will join you in that effort. That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also elsewhere in the Golden State, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN. Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets in the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Whew, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brant Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from BrantBlog.com, where we are now celebrating our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking. Thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to the Bradcast. I hope you survived the weekend, at least marginally better than the Kansas City Chiefs did against the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was quite a game.
Wasn't it, though? Anyway, nice distraction for a few hours. In any event, as usual, now that the game is over, in the Trump era, far too much happened over the weekend for us to be able to cover in full, you know, just one thing after another since we last spoke last week. There you go. There you go, Congressman Jasmine Crockett. We will join you in that effort. That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. Stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also elsewhere in the Golden State, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN. Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets in the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Whew, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brant Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from brantblog.com, where we are now celebrating our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking. Thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to the Bradcast. I hope you survived the weekend, at least marginally better than the Kansas City Chiefs did against the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was quite a game.
Wasn't it, though? Anyway, nice distraction for a few hours. In any event, as usual, now that the game is over, in the Trump era, far too much. And if you missed it, you can always download it all Bradcasts for free at bradblog.com. David detailed the very first steps that were taken last week to shut down the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB, an independent agency that oversees big banks and scammy payday lending outfits and on behalf of consumers, winning ripped-off Americans tens of billions of dollars in fraudulently charged fees. Well, over the weekend, the Trump administration has gone further still in all but shuttering the CFPB, the only federal agency specifically designed to look after the interests of consumers, not businesses, but consumers. The CFPB website now shows a page which reads, "File not found." As I have a guest standing by, I hope to have more on that later on today's show, along with, if time allows, your calls on anything that we may discuss today or even anything we do not over your public airwaves at 818-985-5735. We are currently in Fun Drive here at KPFK, my flagship station in Los Angeles. So if you call in, please press button number one if you'd like to join me on air. Button number two if you would like to donate, which, of course, I hope you do. It would be greatly appreciated. Now, also, since we last spoke last week, the Trump administration has made yet another apparently unlawful authoritarian move to gut the nation's bipartisan campaign and election finance watchdog. That would be the Federal Elections Commission. The Federal Commission, established by Congress in 1974 to enforce and regulate campaign finance law, has six seats on it appointed by the president. No more than three seats may be filled by Democrats and no more than three by Republicans, which has led, particularly in recent years, to criticism of the commission after Republicans began appointing hard right partisan apparatchik to those seats, folks who were frequently unwilling to take action against Republicans, no matter how clear the violation of law was. It would result in 3-3 ties, tie votes by the commission, where no action would then be taken by the FEC, despite what often appears to be egregious campaign violations by presidential and congressional campaigns. Still, the FCC was occasionally able to find consensus, and I would also argue still performed an important role as campaign finance watchdogs, as toothless as the commission sometimes appeared, since even a tie vote would then allow non-governmental watchdog groups to go to court to sue to force compliance with campaign finance laws. Last week, however, the seemingly lawless Trump administration aimed its fire on taking down, yes, the FEC as well, with Donald Trump moving to fire Ellen Weintraub. She's the chairwoman currently of the Federal Election Commission, though she, like Gwyneth Wilcox at the NLRB, charges that her termination is unlawful and invalid, and she's refusing to step down. Nonetheless, on Friday night, Weintraub reported that she had been locked out of her email address, locked out of her office, her work computer. As USA Today reported on Friday, Weintraub, one of three Democrats on the six-member bipartisan panel, posted a letter dated January 31 from Trump that she received on Thursday last week, informing her, quote, "You are hereby removed as a member of the FEC Commission," quote, "effective immediately." In response, Weintraub added in her post sharing this letter, quote, "There's a legal way to replace FEC commissioners. This isn't it." She added, "I've been lucky to serve the American people and stir up some good trouble along the way. That is not changing anytime soon," she promised. The move also comes as Trump and his administration has worked to purge the Justice Department and the FBI of people deemed not loyal enough to Trump and his agenda, while also firing independent inspectors general of federal agencies who might, had they also not been fired, had a thing or two to say about Weintraub's unlawful firing. She was first appointed by President George W. Bush back in 2002, and FEC commissioner serves just six-year terms that are staggered, with two seats are subject to appointment every 2 years. One seat is now vacant, I guess two if you include Weintraub's. New commissioners are nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. Weintraub's official term ended back in 2007, but FEC commissioners continue to serve in their position until they are replaced. Commissioners choose a new chair each year on rotating basis. Weintraub was chosen by her colleagues on the panel to be this year's chair. A White House deputy secretary said in response to her defiance, quote, "The president has made a decision on who he'd like to chair the Federal Election Commission, and it is not her. Grandstanding over this decision will not change the president's mind." Not that any of this, mind you, to my understanding, is actually up to the president, to any president. Weintraub drew a sharp rebuke from Republican FEC commissioner, the targeting of Weintraub drew a sharp rebuke from the former Republican FEC commissioner, Attorney Trevor Potter, who was appointed by President George H.W. Bush. He served in the 90s. He said that the action, quote, "violates the law, the separation of powers, and generations of Supreme Court precedent." While Trump is free to nominate multiple new commissioners and to allow Congress to perform its constitutional role of advice and consent, he said, given the vacant seat and the multiple FEC commissioners serving on expired terms, it is contrary to the law that he instead opted to claim to fire one single Democratic commissioner who has been an outspoken critic of the president's lawbreaking and of the FEC's failure to hold him accountable. That was, again, former Republican FEC Commissioner Trevor Potter. A former legal counsel at the FEC said, quote, "In the entire history of the bipartisan FEC, no president has ever removed a member from the opposing party without naming a successor recommended by that party's congressional leaders." Another former FEC chair and long-serving Democratic commissioner, Ann Ravel, was more direct when I asked her about the news on Friday via email. About the news that Trump was attempting to fire Weintraub, she responded in no uncertain terms via email, saying, quote, "That is insane." Joining us now is former FEC Chair Ann Ravel, who was nominated to the federal elections watchdog by President Barack Obama back in 2013. She was unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate, you know, the old-fashioned way, and she left the commission in 2017. Ann Ravel, welcome back, and thank you for joining us on today's broadcast.
Thank you, Brad, because you just gave a really good synopsis of what it takes to have the FEC being structured with three Republicans, three Democrats, and how in order to get confirmed and appointed, you have to have the U.S. Senate make that decision.
Mm-hmm. Good, because I wanted to ask, you know, was I missing something there? Am I getting it wrong? There is no record in the commission's 50-year history of a commissioner simply being fired, as Trump is now attempting to do with Ellen Weintraub, correct?
That is absolutely correct. No one has ever been fired in that way at all, period. And it turns out, and you may have missed this, though you have a lot of information about what has happened. Mm-hmm. What has actually happened as well that is ridiculous, and you said it's true, she did not want to leave. And it turned out that the president attempted to get the Marines with because he said to her also there was an order saying that she had to pack her belongings,
uh-huh,
right, for a hasty departure. Well, they came after her and they physically went to her office to remove her after Trump fired her. And she refused to vacate the premises, locked her door, and she said she needed actual termination papers from Congress, that it was not the president's right to do that. And as you indicated, the federal law allows commissioners to retain their positions indefinitely until a qualified replacement is found. That did not happen in this case, but the Marines literally went in, knocked it, the door out, and pulled her out.
The Marines knocked the door. She was locked inside her office at that time?
Her office, yeah. And they pulled
her
out. They pulled her out physically. Which I mean, is kind of unbelievable as a way to do that. And one of the things that may have motivated Trump that is, aside from the fact that it is not what has ever happened, there were approximately 20, maybe more, complaints that had been filed against Trump at the FEC. And the sense was there were dozens of complaints related to the 2024 elections, not only complaints against Trump and Musk, who spent nearly $300 million to help the president get elected,
right,
but also complaints that Trump himself actually had filed against Kamala Harris, media outlets, and the like. And, you know, that is undoubtedly the reason why Trump wanted to eliminate the chair, and she has been the chair and commissioner, as you indicated, mm-hmm, for a very long time.
Right.
And the FEC is not a biased commission. It is, as you said, it's balanced in terms of party,
mm-hmm,
and there's always been adherence to the law at the FEC, given that the FEC was established because of campaign fine and corporate campaign finance violations and shakedowns during the Watergate scandal that, you know, took down President Nixon. Mm-hmm. But that's the reason for the bipartisan structure. And the structure is of fairness.
Uh-huh.
The concept is to help the American public understand where the money's coming from, when it's inappropriate, because that impacts their views of democracy and of just campaigns in general.
Unlike the National Labor Relations Board that I mentioned, that they've Trump has fired the chair over there. That means they only have two people, not enough for a quorum. As I understand it, there are still four board members, four commissioners on the FEC, even if you don't count Ellen Weintraub. Would that be enough for the for a quorum for them to move forward on all of these complaints against Donald Trump?
Yes, because although it takes four votes, mm-hmm, there are four still on the commission, and it takes four votes to take an action. So presumably they would be able to do that. But I gather that Trump understood that because there had been a number of issues that have come about, mm-hmm, based on what Ellen had said, mm-hmm, during her tenure, that I presume he thinks that it's possible that because it's usually or has been 3-3, and that's because there are three Democrats, mm-hmm, and three Republicans, and he's maybe assuming that there will not be a majority to actually vote for his position.
Seems like a good guess on his part, does it not? I mean,
yes.
if I'm doing the math, we currently have three Republican appointees, one Democratic appointee. I know there was an independent there that I think generally voted with the Democrats. So it's basically three Republicans to one Democrat. This is all going to now move forward business as usual, except it's 3-1 Republicans throughout all of these complaints coming in, not just for his election, by the way, not just for the presidential election, but the FEC oversees all congressional, House and Senate elections as well, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And, you know, the reality is also true that one of the Democrats mm-hmm. has often gone across the aisle and voted with the Republicans mm-hmm. Because... In her view, in particular, she did not think that it was appropriate to release people's private information. So she was not in favor of disclosure.
Mm-hmm. But it was rare that it would go the other way, where you would have Republicans joining on the Democratic side?
It never happened.
Really?
That is more than rare.
So I guess we can see where all of this is going. Would you expect? I mean, I know that, you know, I always hear about on the Supreme Court how, you know, they're very partisan, of course, in their decisions and so forth. But behind the scenes, they're friendly. They're supportive of each other in theory. I'm wondering, does that sort of happen on the FEC as well, a collegial atmosphere? And if so, I mean, what must the Republican appointees think of this idea that, you know, the president of the United States has sent the Marines in to remove the chair of the commission for no wrongdoing, as far as I'm aware of. Is there any, have you heard of any support from those commissioners for Ellen? Or is this just business as usual? Now that the Marines have left, we'll just go about our business.
Yeah, I have not heard to this point about any Republicans acknowledging that or saying how inappropriate it was. But you're right generally that there always was, and I know that, you know, a lot of people were upset that I said this, because when I was chair of the FEC, I kept saying, you know, there is a lot of dysfunction here uh-huh. because it required four votes to get anything done. And in those cases, often the Republicans would not vote mm-hmm. In favor of some of the campaign finance violations and, mm-hmm. and dealing with them. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to know how they're going to respond now, given the unfair departure of mm-hmm. Ellen.
Yeah.
Weintraub. So, it's not clear that that might make any difference for them.
It should also. But, yeah, go ahead.
No, but, just generally what I feel strongly about is that we know that the political system has to work for all Americans. Mm-hmm. It absolutely must. And so there are ways to reform the FEC to make it effective, strengthen checks and balances so that it's not partisan.
I look forward to that day, Ann Ravel, when there will be a Congress which has any particular interest in doing that. Mm-hmm. It's maddening that a lot of this and a lot of the dysfunction that we've talked about with you on the air, I believe, over the years, is that, you know, the Republican Senate took a hard right turn under Mitch McConnell, and he purposely, you know, put folks in there who were meant to blockade any action from actually happening.
That's true. And that is what happened, which was unfortunate because, as I said before, I feel really strongly about the disclosure that there's required by the law mm-hmm. at the Federal Election Commission, because mm-hmm. it's very important for the American public when they're voting or just generally to know who's behind the campaigns, mm-hmm. who's spending billions of dollars and trying to influence certain things. I mean, because that leads often to lack of trust by the members of the public in the electoral process.
And we know at least one person who is certainly behind with money behind this last campaign. USA Today is reporting that Trump's firing of Weintraub comes as the FEC was taking up dozens of complaints from the 2024 election, including matters involving billionaire tech entrepreneur Elon Musk, Trump's largest donor of the campaign. I guess it's fair to say we're probably not going to see Musk held accountable for any violations in an election where I had no idea that one person could figure out how to give $250-300 million to support a candidate under, you know, even the worst of our Supreme Court decisions. But apparently you can, you know, if you got an extra $250 million sitting around, you can buy a president. You can buy apparently an entire government, it seems.
Right. That's exactly what has happened, given not just Elon Musk, but some of the others who are also very wealthy people in tech. But of course, Elon Musk is now, you know, the head of Trump's whatever he calls that.
Doge. Yeah.
Yeah. Doge. Yeah. So, you know, it is really unfortunate. And I think that going through this process, I really do think that he was trying to subvert the FEC at the critical moment that was because of all of the campaign finance violations mm-hmm. relating to Trump and to yep. his supporters. And that may have been the thing to motivated him mm-hmm. to send that letter to Ellen Weintraub yeah. saying that she's done.
And which sounds completely reasonable to me as an explanation for why he has done that, obviously to protect himself. But on a personal level, Anne, and since you're not a commissioner anymore, hopefully you can, you know, speak to this point. You're a longtime attorney. You've been both on the FEC and, I should note, the California Fair Political Practices Commission out here overseeing political malfeasance by elected officials. What do you think Donald Trump is trying to do here? Not just with his destruction of the FEC, but all of these federal agencies, one after another, federal, you know, independent agencies and, you know, otherwise that we are watching before our very eyes over the past 3 weeks since he has taken office. You told me it's insane what's going on at the FEC. Do you see the rest of it as equally yeah. or more so?
Well, I do think that it's equally as insane for all of the other activity. For example, I too, and you may not know this, but I was a deputy assistant attorney general in the Department of Justice when President Obama was mm-hmm. president, mm-hmm. And it's the way that he has gotten rid of people from the FBI, people who were at DOJ. And I know DOJ is not what Trump called it, the Department of Injustice.
Right.
DOJ, they absolutely had rules that required all of the employees to abide by the law. That's exactly what it was. And so he seems to be willing to destroy all of those important organizations in the federal government.
Anne Ravel, former Federal Elections Commission chair, now a professor at the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. Really appreciate you joining us today to give us some perspective and understanding, and unfortunately to tell me that, yes, this is as insane as it appeared to me when I first saw it. It's just unbelievable. We may be checking in from time to time with you throughout this throughout the next 4 years, and please stand by.
I would appreciate
to
be able to do that with you, and I really am very happy to become familiarized with your KPFK radio program.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Ann. Thank you. You can also find Ann on the Twitters at Ann M. Ravel, though. Ann, I need you to get on Blue Sky as soon as you can.
I will.
Thank you, please. We'll look for you over there. All right. Thank you. Well, let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with a bit more on the latest unlawful deconstruction of the federal government and the U.S. constitutional order.
Okay.
Plus, if time allows, your calls on any of this or anything else at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Hit button number one to join us on air. Button number two to help our flagship station KPFK continue on your public airwaves. And by the way, if you're listening via another independent radio station to the broadcast, please, please consider donating to them to stay on, keep them on your public airwaves, especially right now, more necessarily than ever. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. If you haven't noticed by now, it's no easy feat finding facts, real facts, not alternative facts, over your public airwaves. We try to bring you real facts, truth, and clarity without fear or favor each and every day on the broadcast. But we need your help to do it. If you enjoy the show and or get something from it, please give back a bit if you can by visiting us at bradblog.com/donate. Your support helps Desi and me continue to bring you real, independent, progressive news 5 days a week over your public airwaves. We simply can't do it without your help, and that help is needed more now than ever. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to make a one-time donation or, even better, automated monthly support. It'll take you about 60 seconds, and you can rest easy knowing that we'll be here every day making sense of it all, or at least trying to. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thanks.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We're in Wisconsin today, where a candidate for state Supreme Court had her image manipulated by AI in an opponent's attack ad, and the state's high court allowed the state's embattled elections board administrator to stay after 3 years of conspiracy-driven attacks by state GOP leaders. The campaign of former Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel has admitted it used AI to manipulate an image of his opponent, Dane County Circuit Court Judge Susan Crawford. An ethics complaint was filed February 5th with the Wisconsin Ethics Commission. The Schimmel campaign manipulated a photo with Crawford smiling and told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel it used AI to make her look ashamed. Wisconsin Act 123 requires disclosure of such manipulation and has fines of up to $1,000 per instance. In a story we followed since 2023, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has allowed Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf to stay in her job, despite not being reappointed by the GOP-dominated legislature. Wolf has been vilified by election deniers for recommending the mailing of absentee ballots to nursing home residents during the pandemic. Conspiracy theorists claim Wolf attempted to sway the 2020 election results. A partisan deadlock on the Elections Commission and court precedents have prevented her from being replaced for almost 2 years. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Cloud contains pennies from heaven.
ever.
Well, maybe not anymore. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Shortly after the Super Bowl on Sunday night, it was announced that Donald Trump had ordered the U.S. Mint to stop creating pennies that apparently cost about three times as much to mint as they are worth. There's long been a debate about that, and some think we should stop minting nickels as well. That said, I could not care less. I don't know if Trump even has the legal authority to simply order the U.S. Mint to do as he says. But for the moment, while that is receiving a lot of news coverage on Monday, there are far more disturbing examples of destruction of the constitutional order that is currently underway that, yes, absolutely merits our coverage. I will try to get to some of your calls, but I want to make sure you hear some of this. Our phone number, 818-985-KPFK. The Trump administration has ordered the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to stop nearly all of its work, effectively shutting down an agency that was created to protect consumers after the 2008 financial crisis and subprime mortgage lending scandal. It is the only federal agency focused completely on consumer rights, not corporate rights, but consumer rights. And it's resulted in tens of billions of dollars returned to consumers after they were ripped off by big banks and shady payday lending outfits and other sleazy financial institutions. As discussed with David Day, another prospect last week on this program, the agency has sued the nation's biggest banks as recently as December over failing to counter fraud on their payment app, Zelle. The same month, CFPB sued Walmart for opening bank accounts for their own delivery drivers with exorbitant junk fees that cost the drivers at least $10 million. 4 days before Trump's inauguration, the CFPB fined the Cash App $175 million, including $120 million that goes directly to harmed customers over responding to fraud allegations with, quote, intentionally shoddy investigations and customer service. Those are just a few of the many actions that the CFPB has taken on behalf of Americans, American consumers, and apparently they are no longer allowed to pursue on behalf of those consumers. You know, the working men and women that Donald Trump pretended to give a damn about during his various campaigns for president. Dayan reports that the CFPB has obtained nearly $20 billion in financial relief for U.S. consumers since its founding in the form of canceled debts. Its founding, by the way, was in 2008. So $20 billion back to consumers since just 2008 in the form of canceled debts, compensation, reduced loans. Last month, the Bureau sued Capital One for allegedly misleading consumers about its offerings for high-interest savings accounts and cheating customers out of more than $2 billion in lost interest payments as a result, according to the Bureau. And oh yeah, Dan also notes that all of this raises concerns about Elon Musk, whose company, X, used to be called Twitter, is seeking to create a consumer payment app very similar to Zelle or the Cash App, which the CFPB would have oversight of. That app, even as Musk's Doge team, his Doge bros, have taken oversight of the CFPB, presumably including looking at information on investigations of both Elon Musk and his companies and his competitors. How nice for Elon Musk. Maybe that's just one reason that Musk commented on his social media site, previously Twitter, last week. He wrote, quote, CFPB, rest in peace, along with a tombstone. The teen hacker dudes then from Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency or DOGE reportedly deleted the CFPB's Twitter account on Friday night. The Doge bros have since been granted administrative access to CFPB systems, including content management systems, back-end systems for the Bureau's website, and the active directory of personnel, according to a report from CNN. While work had previously been paused at CFPB last week, Russ Vogt, the newly installed director of the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, directed the CFPB in a Saturday night email confirmed by the AP to stop all work on all proposed rules, to suspend the effective dates on any rules that were already finalized but are not yet effective, and to stop all investigative work and not begin any new investigations at the agency, which has been the target of Republicans since Barack Obama created it with Congress in response to the 2007-2008 financial crisis.
You know that it is an important agency when they have tried since its very first inception, even when it was just a gleam in Elizabeth Warren's eye, to try to kill that
it.
Agency.
Yep. The email ordered the Bureau to, quote, cease all supervision and examination activity. So, hey, you're welcome, big banks and sleazy payday lenders. And yes, Trump's largest campaign donor by far, Elon Musk. Anybody out there, any supporters of Donald Trump want to defend that? 818-985-5735. I bet you don't. I bet you don't want to call in and defend that, do you? 818-985-KPFK. I can hardly blame you. On Sunday, then, administration officials said that the CFPB's headquarters in Washington, D.C. would be closed effective on Monday. That, according to the email obtained by AP, quote, employees and contractors are to work remotely unless instructed otherwise, the email to headquarters workers said. Though what work they may still be allowed to do remotely, what there is even left to carry out is unclear at this point, since Russ Vogt shut it all down, seemingly, with his email order. The order follows similar efforts, of course, by the White House to dismantle the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, blocking the delivery of tons of food and medicine to needy people in nations all around the globe. Among many other ways, by the way, that American soft power through USAID was reflected in assisting the people of the world for a relatively small price tag. And I would ask if anybody out there, any Trump supporters, want to defend that. But I know they have been steeped in so much of Elon Musk's BS about USAID, so many lies, literally propaganda packages put together by Russia claiming that USAID was paying for all of these celebrities to take spa vacations to the Ukraine.
It was complete nonsense.
Now,
a hoax.
But give us a call, 818-985-KPFK. Let's hear you defend that. Since the CFPB is a creation of Congress, it would require a separate act of Congress to formally eliminate it, but the head of the agency has discretion over what enforcement actions it decides to take, if any, so I guess they could just keep it there, keep it alive since Congress created it, but they could just order, you know, the workers to do nothing at all in the meantime. As I noted, the homepage for CFPB just before air was down. It was taken down on Sunday. It was still down with a page not found error on Monday. So if you were calling to file a consumer complaint, if you wanted to reach the CFPB, well, you can't do that anymore either. All of that follows Trump upon taking office for his second term, firing the prior head of the CFPB, Rohit Chopra, who was appointed by President Biden. Even though Chopra's term was not supposed to end until next year, he is systematically dismantling the federal government. Dennis Kelleher, the president of the advocacy group Better Markets, said, quote, Wall Street's biggest banks and Trump's billionaire allies hate the Bureau. It's an effective cop on the finance beat, and has stood side by side with hundreds of millions of Americans, Republicans and Democrats, battling financial predators, scammers and crooks. So no wonder they have to take it down. The 1,600 or so workers at the CFPB, however, are not taking this lying down. In response to all of this, OMB Director Russ Vogt was hit with two union lawsuits on Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, in D.C. District Court. One seeks to block the Doge Bros' access to CFPB employee information, alleging three staffers affiliated with the unofficial office of Doge were given access to internal systems. The second alleges that Vogt's directive halting work at the Bureau and his refusal to receive its next disbursement of funding, quote, reflects an unlawful attempt to thwart Congress's decision to create the CFPB to protect American consumers, unquote. The Doge lawsuit alleges that the same day that Vogt instructed the CFPB staff to grant Musk's team access to all non-classified bureau systems, the billionaire tech mogul posted CFPB, RIP. Now, to date, there are, I believe, more than 40 different lawsuits against the administration in response to not just what's going on at CFPB, but all of these administrations where the president is taking outrageously, clearly unlawful actions. They have lost almost every single one of those suits, or at least they've lost every motion that has come up before the judges over the past several days and weeks. The 83-year-old Ronald Reagan-appointed judge who rejected Trump's attempt to end birthright citizenship, for example, despite the fact that it's written clear as day into the 14th Amendment and can't just be canceled by an executive order. That Ronald Reagan-appointed judge wrote in blocking that blatantly unconstitutional move, quote, it has become ever more apparent that to our president, the rule of law is but an impediment to his policy goals. The rule of law is, according to him, something to navigate around or simply ignore, whether that be for political or personal gain. Nevertheless, in this courtroom, he wrote, and under my watch, the rule of law is a bright beacon which I intend to follow. That was U.S. District Judge John Kohenauer in Seattle late last week. But beyond all of this violence and destruction of the rule of law, the real constitutional crisis may still lie ahead when and if the administration simply decides to begin ignoring federal court orders to knock it off. And then what? I think we are now closer to crossing that Rubicon than you might realize. Legal and constitutional experts warned on Sunday that the U.S. could be headed toward a constitutional crisis or a, quote, breakdown of the system after Vice President J.D. Vance suggested in a tweet on Sunday that judges don't have jurisdiction over President Donald Trump, writing, quote, if a judge tried to tell a general how to conduct a military operation, that would be illegal, Vance wrote. If a judge tried to command the attorney general and how to use her discretion as a prosecutor, that's also illegal, adding judges aren't allowed to control the executive's legitimate power. His legitimate power. It wasn't clear what judge or court order the Vance was referring to, since Trump's sweeping agenda items have met legal roadblocks. As I said, more than 40 lawsuits filed against the administration since he took office. Rick Pildes, a professor at NYU Law School, highlighted Vance's use of the words, quote, legitimate powers in his post about this, but pointed out that the judiciary is the branch with the power to decide what a president can legitimately do or not. Quote, under the rule of law and the Constitution, it is the courts that determine whether some use of the executive power is lawful or not. That is the critical point, said Pildes via email to NBC News. The concern is that the vice president's statement could be taken to suggest that the executive branch is prepared to refuse to comply with the court order based on the president's own view that he has a power that the courts have concluded he does not have, he added. A president who orders his officials not to comply with court orders would be creating a constitutional crisis, and I am sure this president wouldn't want that, right? I got more on this, but I'd love to hear from you. 818-985-KPFK. Because I think we are absolutely on the precipice of this. And in fact, a judge on Monday said that's exactly what has happened in an order to stop the freeze on billions of dollars that the Office of Management and Budget last week tried to freeze across the entire government. Court said no, put that on hold. And yet, apparently, the funds, at least some of them, are still being frozen. And Judge John McConnell in Rhode Island on Monday said that the Trump administration is ignoring the plain text of the law. Well, what happens then? What happens then? J.D. Vance has said when he was, I believe it was when he was running for the U.S. Senate, that he agrees with the idea that the judiciary, if they have a problem with something the executive does, let them enforce it. Let them enforce it themselves. That's where we're headed, folks. 818-985-KPFK. And I think we're headed there very quickly. Let me go to Rob in Apple Valley. Hey, Rob, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, Brad, I hope you're doing well.
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can. I'm doing just fine. Yeah, a little static on my end. Here's what I want to say from the get-go. Hey, Donald Trump, you're fired, right? You know, he doesn't have the authority to do this, and I certainly don't. So what's the difference with there, right? You know?
Yeah, I okay. Hear you.
But I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
What's it, a while back, you said you didn't feel you were doing your job because people didn't listen. I want to tell you, you did well. It's a lot of other things that failed, okay? But I'm going to move on because I wanted to get to what you were saying about firing everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea behind like what these folks have been saying about smaller government is basically no Democrats, right? Especially Democrats that are investigating this guy.
Uh-huh.
Because if he's ever found out what he actually did, He would crumble so quickly, and that would really, it would dash so many hopes of so many people, wouldn't it?
Well, this has nothing to do with smaller government. They have absolutely no interest in smaller government. I'm sure there is waste, fraud, and abuse that could be culled. That's not what they're doing. They're just wiping it out, facing all kinds of lawsuits that is going to end up costing money in the bargain, that is going to end up making it worse and a larger government, for example, when we have to respond to antibiotic-resistant tuberculosis because the medicine that we stopped giving overseas to people suffering with TB, that TB becomes resistant to drugs. It comes over here. We end up with another TB epidemic. I know it's outrageous to think that we might end up with a worldwide pandemic. Who could ever think of something like that happening? I know. But anyway. Hey, thanks, Rob. Good to hear from you, my friend. Appreciate it.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Appreciate the kind words as well. Let me go to Larry in San Pedro. Hey, Larry, welcome. Welcome back to the broadcast, my friend. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for taking my call.
I guess you're not one of those Trump supporters that I asked to give us a call to defend any of this. For some reason, they're just not calling. I don't understand why. Anyway, go ahead, Larry.
Thanks, Brad. So today, Donald Trump said that he will respect the judge's orders. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if he's lying to us or not on mm-hmm. that. Issue. Mm-hmm. And number two, it's not being reported across the board about the American Cancer Society. Their critical annual cancer report has been scrubbed, and it deals with lung cancer, women's cancers, Black American cancers, and youth cancers. So I just wanted to get that in.
Yep.
so that people would hear that.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry. I appreciate that. And yeah, that's one of the many things that, you know, we just can't get to everything. He further over the weekend ended, put a freeze on NIH grants, National Institutes of Health grants and spending that had already been approved in many cases. We talked about this last week, Desi, with a family member of yours.
Yes.
Who had learned that grants were on hold, and now it looks like grants are not coming?
Well, so it's a bit of a split decision here. There was a recent judge's ruling that the 22 states that sued to reinstate that grant funding, mm-hmm. that has been unfrozen. But the other thing that has also happened is Trump putting in a cap mm-hmm. on what are called, you know, basically the overhead expenses. When you write yep. a grant, when you're a scientist, you're writing a grant for not only what will cover your specific salary, but the university or the institution that is hosting you, they've got to pay the bills. They got property taxes. They got lighting, they've got electricity, they've got other overhead that they supply in order to ensure that research goes through. So when Trump and the Office of Management Budget Director vote, basically put a cap on that. Instead of paying the full amount, they're limiting it to just 15%, which means that a lot of universities and research institutions are suddenly seeing a millions and millions of dollars shortfall
yep.
That they didn't have, you know, 22, 72 hours ago.
So institutions, colleges, healthcare institutions are going to be losing huge chunks of money, which means they're going
exactly.
to go out of business, which means this research is not going to happen. But other than that, yeah, let's make America great again. Let me go to Morris. We haven't heard from Morris in quite a while. Hey, Mo, welcome to the broadcast. I can't remember if we talked to you since the beginning of the year, so happy New Year. What's on your mind, my friend?
Thank you, Bradley. A new narrative for you. The United States is currently involved in a currency war with the de-dollarization, if you want to call it that. You've got BRICS. They've got 50% of the world economy right now. Our sanctions are completely worthless. We're talking about putting a tariff on Ontario. There goes three northeastern states of the United States that are going to really feel a crunch on that energy thing.
Yep.
And Elon Musk, he's about to be put out of business by a fellow by the name of Maxwell Chupamuso. He come up with this thing called the Microsonic Energy, a self-charging generator. Neither I must know about this guy. The guy's history. And happy Black History to you. Talk to you later.
Okay, man. It's going to take me a week just to unwind all the things that Mo just fit into those 5 minutes.
I know. That was quite a lot there.
But, speaking of tariffs, I will note that Donald Trump has said that he has imposed now a 25% tariff on all steel and aluminum imports into the United States with no exceptions or exemptions. And he's already threatened anyone who puts tariffs in turn against us that he will slap them back by putting tariffs on everything coming into our country. See how the stock market does tomorrow. All right, we got to get out here. We will be back, of course, tomorrow. We'll let you know how that stock market is looking by morning. Until then, my thanks to our board operator, Wendell Handy. Thank you, sir. To our producer, Desi Doyen. To my guest today, former FEC Commissioner Ann Revel. And, of course, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can at any time download it for free at bradblog.com. You can find me on the social medias. In especially Blue Sky at the Brad Blog. And did I say my email? Bradcast@bradblog.com. Okay, that's it. We will see you there until we see you here next time. Although if you're listening on KPFK, stick around. Got a special message for you in a moment. Until we see you there, I'll see you here tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
To the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.